Okay. Hi, everyone. At the risk of bursting into giggles or starting this video 5 or 10 more times, I'm just going to jump right into it. We are just going to jump right into it. Welcome to episode 2.0 of the Ed Nontech podcast. We are still very much figuring this out as we go. Doug has reminded me of this repeatedly, even just in the past 20 minutes or so as we were talking. We just thought we'd start out with a couple of mini intros here, contextually as we are, right? I'm Matt Stranick, Dr. Matt Stranick. I got my Ed.D. from the University of Calgary about 5 years ago, which feels kind of significant. That's a half of a decade under the river since then, under the bridge since then, I should say. And I guess I would also just like to say that Doug and I are both coming from our respective unceded indigenous territories, right? And I'm just going to say, like, I am still at a point when I'm not going to know all the right terminology or, how to speak to this. But it's been my experience that it's better to try and speak to something imperfectly than wait for a sense of decorum or perfection that isn't there. So I'm just going to say that right now, I'm located in Shikwetmik-Ulu, the historic and unceded territories of the Shikwetmik Nation. I'm in what's colloquially, I guess, or since colonial times, known as Lower Sahali within Kamloops, BC. It's gorgeous here. The land and the nature have never failed to inspire me. And it does, now that I've sort of been here for almost 5 years, it gives me pause to consider, the other coast where I spent almost the first 30 years of my life and where I go back home as often as I can to Fredericton, New Brunswick, which is the home of the Wolastoqiyik. The Wolastoqiyik River, notably, because that has just sort of burned into my imagination since I was a kid. But as well, what's I guess again through the colonial lens known as the Mi'kmaq and Maliseet people of Eastern Canada and the Eastern United States, because of course, those boundaries between Canada and the U.S. are very, very recent compared to the thousands of years. And millennia where people have lived here before. So again, I just want to throw that out there. It's one thing to sort of put it on a slide. It's one sort of thing to sort of, put it on the bottom of an email. This is meaningful to me. It's important to me. And again, I don't mean to throw this over to Doug in any way. Doug's going to speak for his own, moment. But if you're asking me sort of to do a mini introduction, I'm just going to say I'm grateful for being here all the time. And any criticisms I make about Kamloops or other things are in no way meant to contradict or interfere with that, hopefully. So I'm going to turn it over to Doug. Sorry for going longer on there than I meant to, Doug.
It's all good, Matt. So my name is Dr. Doug Reed. I am in PEI, so that's unceded Mi'kmaq territory. And I'm just feeling honored to be here. It's just wonderful here with now that Fiona's kind of gone past and people have power again. That's pretty darn awesome. We're pretty happy with all that. And what I'd really like to do is this podcast, we're calling it EdTech versus IT support because there's a difference. And it drives me nuts when we don't talk about that. So what do you got there, Matt?
I'm just saying, Doug has been coming up with some really awesome academic notes to go with the podcast. And we were just sort of speaking, pardon me. Again, I'm just going to apologize. I've had a persistent chest and throat problem. So I'm just coming out of it now. But if you see me popping Halls or caramels or whatever, or I need if I need a moment to compose my voice, I just I don't want to sound too dissonant here. Doug?
So along with that, I have had a nose thing for 2 weeks, which is why we didn't get this done last week.
Dude, my right sinus was like going like a faucet, right? And I had the thing where it goes into your back of your throat and into your chest, you know, while you're sleeping or trying to sleep. And then it congeals and turns into friggin'. And I mean, I don't know. I smoke weed, right, from time to time as a recreational person may in Trudeau's Canada. And again, I'm sure that just adds to the level of awfulness. But again, I'm chasing Buckley's with other choice beverages. Did I just describe Buckley's as a beverage? My kids are going to be sad. Not really, but anywho. Besides talking about the state of our ill health, which is definitely a Maritimer thing, I'd just like to say, Doug, you prepared some excellent notes. You came up with this topic quite some time ago, and we were actually going to speak to it before, but we kind of, you know, the hurricane kind of changed what we intended to do with that. I'm almost, you know, I mentioned it to Doug beforehand. I would almost incline just to kind of go through here, and I just kind of like to ask Doug some questions about this topic, because he came up with this very evocative notion in the notes, which, you know, you'll see on the post that goes with this. And I was going to actually almost read the whole thing. It's the most awesome Wikipedia thing I've seen in a while. So we're calling this episode, you know, The Vapors, because that's a little bit more, I think, evocative, you know, than what Doug just came up with. And he's pasted in some info here from Wikipedia. And I'll just read a couple sentences as to why I like it so much. The vapors, mental condition. In archaic usage, the vapors is a mental, psychological, or physical state such as hysteria, mania, clinical depression, bipolar disorder, lightheadedness, fainting, flush, withdrawal syndrome, mood swings, or PMS in which a sufferer loses mental focus. Now, I'm just saying, man, I'd be finding it difficult to find somebody, you know, who grows to adult age, who, based on that description, has not experienced the vapors, you know, in one form or another. So that sort of led me to think that you're thinking about some ambiguity in terms of naming. Excuse me. I refuse to cut out that cough. And just one more point before, dear God, I should let you talk now. You put this in really big letters, big in the Google document, that is, we have a naming issue. So, Doug, I'm just curious about all this. Where are we going here, bud?
Okay. One of the biggest problems I have with my PhD that's in educational computing, because in Australia, that's what they call it, is people don't know what that means. So you become, well, you've got technology in a title, so you must be a tech. You're the person that crawls under the table and plugs cords in. Or you're the person that I can go to if my phone's not taking the right pictures, and what can I do about resolutions, or how do I save this file? Like, you people just lump you in as ed tech. And it drives me nuts. And one of the articles I found was by Waters in 2012. And she described ed tech as research, reading, writing, collaboration, communication, creation, logic, standardized. And it keeps going on and on and on and on and on. Kind of like that vapors definition, Matt, that you just read. And it's like, we have a problem. Because I'm not all those things. You're not all those things. Nobody is all those things. But we don't even get to say what we are, because everybody else has already decided what ed tech means. A secondhand conversation with the dean of education. And they're like, oh, no, we don't need ed tech, because after the pandemic, everybody, all my profs know how to use technology. And it's like, well, that's not true. And they didn't want to hear that. And I didn't work for this person anyway, so it didn't matter. But it was like, why don't we call ed tech what it is, as opposed to like the shorthand for what it isn't? It's like, you can't say that. It's like, if I'm trying to describe myself, right? It's like, yeah, I'm a white guy. I live in PEI. I'm dressed like a jackaroo because it's Halloween. I have two dogs. I'm married, right? I have a house. I can see the ocean, right? That doesn't describe who I am. That's not just me. I'm not that list of things. I am more complicated than that. And I am more sophisticated than that. So why are we letting people name us whatever they feel like naming us? Like, it's a disaster and it's causing a lot of problems.
That, my friend, is dope. I appreciate your personal sort of commitment there. And I guess, you know, above and beyond the lack of, I suppose, disciplinary focus. And, you know, I think this kind of comes to the nature of how, you know, every institution handles ed tech differently, if we're talking specifically about the post-secondary context, which is kind of, you know, where you and I both come from mostly. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you have people who have, you know, credentials in wildly different areas who maybe 5 or 10 years ago, you know, they're faculty or staff, and they maybe get seconded into this kind of thing, and they develop sort of an in-house expertise. There's quite a need for local excellence. You know, there's quite a need for people who know how to use computing systems and software with great efficiency. I hate to say this and sound like some kind of elitist. I really, you know, that's not the intention. But I think Doug and I, you know, where we both tend to agree is that, I mean, I've got 3 degrees in the field of education, plus my, you know, BA. Yeah, it's okay. And I'm not saying to, you know, sort of speak to this stuff that you need that. But I think like there should be like the equivalency, you know, like, you know, there's the Red Seal trades across Canada. There should sort of, or the provincial instructor diploma here in BC, offered through Vancouver Community College, which is a friggin' excellent approach to getting non-pedagogical people into, you know, who have pedagogical responsibility, recognizing that. So, I mean, if that could be used, say, as a model to recognize things, and everybody was like, in order to pretend you know about teaching and learning vis-a-vis the internet, you know, here's a thing you can do, right? Here's a thing you can do that people will look at and go, okay, you know, in addition to those of us who just kind of pursue this stuff out of passion or eccentricity or interest or whatever. Doug, have I added anything to the conversation there, or was I just kind of repeating what you said?
No, I thought you were adding stuff. I enjoyed listening to it anyway.
Well, I mean, I don't know, man. I just like, I don't want to sound exclusionary ever, right? That's the problem. And I know that you don't either. So maybe you can just sort of speak to, you know, what it means for you, like what your experience has been like dealing, you know, or dealing with things like sort of over the course of your very long career, you know, how both technology has evolved and how pedagogical approaches have evolved. See, this is where I get to benefit from working with somebody who's been in the field, you know, roughly twice as long as me. So, I mean, do you want to speak to that sort of time shift, my friend?
I have 4 degrees as well, which is kind of cool. We both have the BA, and mine's in history. And all the stuff I used to read, because I love history, it was people got the vapors. People died from the vapors. And as we learned more, we learned that it wasn't vapors. It was like mania. It was like a liver disease. It was, we learned this stuff, and we grew our definitions and grew our understandings. And right now, ed tech is in the vapor stage. Like, it's a disaster. It's, we don't know, so it's the is vapor.
It, might you say, to extend the metaphor, might you say that there is vapor lock, perchance, preventing the overall educational mechanism from not starting? And take it from me, a guy who doesn't have a driver's license, I'm just really guessing at what vapor lock is. That's a thing, Doug, speaking as a guy with 4 university degrees and a driver's license. Good.
Vapor lock. What I thought it was when, like, you have a hose and there's a air bubble in the middle, and that stops the hose from running whatever fluid through it, and that's a vapor lock. That's the way it's been explained to me.
Conceptually,
and my brain does that sometimes.
Conceptually, the vapors are perhaps causing a lock, yes, on new conceptual models, practical approaches, pedagogy, which is maybe less reliant on platforms and vendors. And, you know, again, I don't want to be exclusionary. I don't want to be like, you know, you got to be this and this before you can attempt anything. Like, if I had waited to have multiple degrees before I attempted to do something with a wiki in Qatar, I mean, it would never have happened, right? It was driven by personal passion. And I get that. But at the same time, when I was doing that, I did have a B.Ed. degree, okay? I had taught for a little while. I have been in a classroom for some amount of time already at that point when I decided to sort of add to my portfolio or get more specialized or whatever you want to say, right? And I guess one thing, Doug, if I may sort of to move it on here, I sent you a couple of resources through Facebook. And just while we're talking about naming and nomenclature and terminology and these kind of things, there's a couple of really cool resources, which I haven't had time to more than locate them and sort of skim them. One of them's Martin Weller from the Open University of the UK. And he has a book out, an ebook, freely available through Athabasca University Press, Metaphors of EdTech. Okay.
That, I was loving that. Thank you for sharing that with me.
Now, even before I go into any of the content, which all looks uniformly awesome, because Weller, he's a cool cat. I mean, he's been doing this stuff for 30 years. You know, he has blogs, he has some pretty cool stuff on his social media. And just, you know, 2 or 3 years ago, he did his 25 years of EdTech, which had a really excellent package of supplemental podcasts and blogs and all this awesome stuff, notably through BC Campus. So I guess I don't even want to speak to it more than that, except to hear, obviously, whatever you're going to say in a moment. But I will say, my only real question for Martin Weller, if you watch this, which you probably won't, but metaphors of EdTech, okay? I just wonder, why not metaphors for EdTech? Of seems a little passive to me. For seems like, you know, it would have a little bit more activity or agency. So I just wonder about the choice of the intentionality of the choice behind that preposition in the title. Whether or not that just makes me a wanker, it probably does. But honestly, so Doug, I mean, before I just kind of ramble even further, did you get a chance to look at that? Because, you know, more.
Yeah.
Okay. So what are your thoughts, dude?
I really enjoyed it. I didn't read the whole thing because I only got it a couple of days ago. But what I read was like, this is awesome. This is a book that I wish I had written. Right. And that's rare, right? It's like, oh, I love this. The reason why it's of and not for,
okay,
is we're not there yet. Part of our naming issue is the ed tech people aren't doing it. It's the other people that are coming up with it. And that's why it's of and not for. It's the wrong direction. We're still taking all the guidance from the people that aren't in our realm, that don't have our experience. Because part of the big problem for me is some people have an open mindset and they want to learn. They just do, right? And they learn all kinds of stuff, and the more you know, the better it is. And some people have a closed mindset. And sometimes the people with the closed mindsets, they already know everything. And some of these is what I think is leaching into ed tech. the people that are doing the naming and deciding what EdTech is, their minds are shut. They don't want to know. They don't need to know. We're the people that crawl under the desk.
Okay.
We're the people
now,
that has the cord to get the floppy disk out of the computer or whatever.
I'm loving the verbal flow, and I'm loving the conceptual flow here. I guess just to play devil's advocate, I mean, you're referring to they. So yep. The inner critic in me does ask, you know, to have what will hopefully be a very descriptive delineation of what you mean by they, even though I think I know, but I don't, you know, so I'm prepared to be entertained on that one. And I'll just quickly throw out the other reference I was going to throw in here, because otherwise I will forget. Contact North. Are you familiar with Contact North stuff at all, Doug?
Not recently.
No, man.
I've heard of it before, but
it's fine. Okay, it's fine if you don't know about it. It originates in Ontario, and to the best of my knowledge, they're more or less, you know, the same consortium of educators and bureaucrats and other people who are involved with eCampus Ontario, which is the, you know, equivalent to that would be BC Campus, and mm-hmm. in as much as they're both really powerful resources. Anyway, and they're not just resources at all. But anyway, I got the friggin' newsletter just, you know, in my Gmail, which is weird because I don't really know about that, but it turned up there. and it had a blog from Tony Bates. And Tony Bates, again, I shared this with you. He actually, you know, basically linked to a study the Canadian Digital Learning Research Association, and I'm familiar with this. This came out originally, you know, 6 months ago or thereabouts, a year ago, but defining key terms related to digital learning. So, I mean, if you're, you know, a practitioner or somebody who's looking for some conceptual clarity, this is the kind of thing where I'm like,
yeah,
you can go there. It's legit and it's vetted. And Tony Bates is, to my mind, again, he's an open learning original person, and he's just done some consistently great work. And they're actually doing the third version now of teaching in a digital age, which is, again, I don't know if you've ever checked it out, but for like non-educators, it is a straight up playbook for how to use some of this stuff effectively. Yes. And I don't mean like non-educators, you know, like derogatively. I just mean like people who may have a teaching responsibility who have not gone through pedagogical training, right? So
yeah. Or anyway, that's training was that Thursday, Friday before semester started way back when.
I went to the Teaching and Learning Center once. I had a certificate. they stopped serving muffins, so I stopped coming. I'm sorry. Just, yeah.
Hey, you want people to learn? You bring food, and sometimes coffee.
And you keep it short, okay?
Yeah.
Like the shorter and with the more short bread, the better.
Yeah.
Yeah, more short and more short bread at these. I don't know. It's been a while since I worked at a teaching learning center. Doug, have you ever worked at a teaching and learning center, or have you kind of been in other kind of functional units?
I've worked with them,
okay,
a lot.
Yeah,
but I've always ended up with other roles, but I've always, like, I love working with them because they want to help. They have an open mindset. Everybody I've ever met there has an open mindset. What can we do to improve? What can we do to help the students? And it's not, no, we tried that 20 years ago, I'm never doing that again. It's, what can we do to help? Things change, how do we move forward?
I
love that.
I spent 3 years of my career when I was in Ontario at a teaching and learning center. I sort of moved on to other things because I felt it could be advantageous for my career to do so. But I mean, honestly, I'd go back to that kind of work again in a heartbeat. It's, you know, and like every experience I've had with one of these, you know, places at the, you know, the three or four institutions that I've worked for, it's always been awesome. You always get the most committed people. And this is where, you know, to tie this kind of back into the ed non-tech, deal. I think, just having like some sort of, here's how to deal with highly educated people who don't know fuck all about technology, customer service yep. training of a variety, right? Except you call it a pedagogical workshop, or maybe it's the other way around. You call it technology training, but then you just, turn it into a pedagogy thing. I don't know. I don't have the answers to this stuff, but.
No, me neither. Me neither. I wish I did, but I know that it becomes like the relationship building. It's good teachers care. Right. Yes. And they build those relationships and we make it work. And if there's technology there, great. And if not, that's fine too. But we got to figure out what technology is. I found when I was doing my PhD, I found a research article from 1902. And the research article said, you need to stop using chalk and slate and start using pencil and paper. And that was a huge technology leap. And then I followed that journal along. And then by like the end of World War I, 1918, it was, you can't use chalk and slate anymore. It has to be pencils and paper. We're not paying for any more chalks or slates. So we've been doing the ed tech thing for over 100 years. But the naming issue comes from we haven't named it ourselves. We're not good at that because we're there to help. So like some groups like they've come up with their own names, like instructional technology coach or ed tech coach, and then they're not an ed tech person, they're the ed tech coach. They're not crawling under desks. They're not rebooting your system from their desk, right? They're not sitting and taking control of your monitor to see what you're doing wrong in the LMS, right? They're the coach. They're helping the educators do stuff.
Dude, that was a lot to unpack. I noticed that you keep coming kind of back to this. They're climbing under the desks thing. And, with all respect to the colleagues who do that, God bless. And we do certainly appreciate that.
That's IT support. Right. That's tech support. That's not ed tech. The ed part is missing.
Well, okay. So now, first of all, I think probably if we sort of have anything to offer through this podcast, besides wisecracks and sharp, dressing, I think one of the things we could say is that just straight up, there's a need for conceptual clarity. So I'm just going to sort of turn it around now in terms of other terms for the field, and maybe you can just tell me what you thought, what you think of them. So what about learning design? What do you think about learning design as a thing?
Yeah, I think that needs to happen. Instructional designers have been doing that for decades.
Do you distinguish between learning design and instructional design?
Yep.
Okay, how so?
With instructional design. No, that's a good one.
Forget it.
You teed it up for me.
I don't mean to throw you under the bus, man. We can even cut this part out. I'm just like,
Well, no, man.
What's your opinion? Because I don't have a clue. I'll just preface that.
Well,
I don't have
a clue. There's a difference between learning and instruction. Right? Instruction has an educator involved.
Yeah.
Right, and something's being taught, and there's a structure to that where who's in charge here, right? Is it the educator trying to get through a certain amount of curriculum, or is it the person doing the learning, right? And those are two different things. Like, I learn plenty without an educator around. A lot of it is Murphy's Law, right? It's like, yeah, I could do everything the wrong way, that's for darn sure, and then I learn not to do it the wrong way. So it's the difference between what learning is and what instruction is.
You've
So yeah, I see them as two different things.
Awesome. Two particular things that jump out from that. Your reference to learning, which happens outside of, say, formally accredited or whatever context, that sounds an awful lot like prior learning assessment stuff to me, PLAR. Do you have any particular opinions about that? Because I kind of have positive viewpoints on that.
Oh, yeah.
And my second question, before I forget, have you heard of Community of Inquiry, Garrison and colleagues, and what are your opinions on that? So two-pronged question, dude, which you can choose to ignore any of it or all of it.
The PLAR stuff I find interesting, but it's the prior that I'm questioning in this context right here.
Okay.
Because prior means beforehand, right? So what if I'm taking a class and I'm doing whatever, and then I still go learn on my own while this other instruction is happening, right? That's not prior anymore. That's just learning that I picked up at the same time, right? It could be synchronously, but it's who's responsible for the learning and how do I prove that I did the learning? Like, where's that representation happening? And I think PLAR, like in Australia, it's called Credential Prior Learning, CPL. Okay. And I think it's vital, right? I think why are we making people jump through hoops, right? What we want is for them to know a certain thing at the end. I don't care how they get there, as long as they do the learning. That's what matters to me anyway, unless you're a big fan of the piece of paper. Because I know some people that got PhDs just so they could beat people with them. I have a PhD, you have to call me doctor, and you have to do whatever. But I don't care how they get there as long as people do the learning, because I find that the more learning that they do, the more open that they are, the better their life can be. And the more you can contribute to society and all those other bigger philosophical things. And the other one, I haven't read Garrison stuff in about 10 years. So I liked it when I read it 10 years ago, but I honestly don't remember it enough now to have a coherent comment on it.
It's a Venn diagram that changed my life. And by that I mean facetiously, I do mean it facetiously, but I also mean that's like, you know, the conceptual thing upon which my doctoral work rested. I realized, and this is just, you know, on the side, I'm now past the point, I think, where I am ethically able to destroy the hard copies of my doctoral data, like my data collection, the surveys and stuff. Mm-hmm. The ethics board told me 5 years. My 5 years was up on September 15th. So now becomes the question, do I want to just hold on to this stuff, or do I want to put it on the patio and ceremoniously set it on fire, right? Blasting loud music or something in between, you know?
Once you move a lot, you don't have to worry about that. It's not even ceremonious. It's like, man, this stuff weighs a lot.
So you just shifted into, the recycling or whatever.
I
you shredded it
in the university, and they did the shred thing.
Right. Okay. Well, again, I'm just sort of like, I don't know. It's just sort of like a little benchmark within my thing. I'm like, I am ethically and professionally further into my thing now, you know, whatever that is. So
now, this is an aside, but I think it's awesome you know the date. Did you defend? Did you have to defend, like, in front of a bunch of people at the table and they did all asked you questions? And
I did a virtual version of that, okay, because it was a education doctorate with a focus on educational technology through the University of Calgary with a blended model. So there were two summer residencies of a few weeks each within the first couple of years of the program. But then the rest of it, you know, could be largely, if not all of it, accomplished online. It's meant to take 3 years or longer. It took me five because I, you know, move countries and stuff. But ultimately, yeah, exactly. But when it came time to defend, they would have had me at the Calgary campus. But I chose, because I have a young family and everything, I actually did that at a university where I worked. I just seconded a boardroom at the science building of Ontario Tech University. My amazing, excellent colleague, Dr. Toba Byrant from the health sciences faculty there, proctored the whole thing. You know, she was the contact person for making that happen and assuring academic credibility or whatever at our end. That's something else too, man. I was working at a teaching and learning center. Toba is, Dr. Bryant is somebody who, it's been years later, but she came to the teaching center for some help, and we just developed a long-standing collegial and, I guess at this point, probably personal friendship. You know, I talked with her as recently as a couple of weeks ago. She sends me stuff sometimes, just asks for my opinion, and we just chat. So, again, I think just speaking to things that work well in education are these, you know, one by one kind of personal relationships. And if educators are at that mentality where they engage with students collectively, of course, but as individuals, then maybe, you know, you can sort of move the enterprise forward a little bit more.
Now, what's interesting is I don't have a date for mine because in Australia, they don't do that. At my institution, what they did was your research has to stand on its own. They mail it out. So my committee, there was like, I send it to the States, I send it to other places in Australia or whatever. I mailed it out. They had 6 weeks to review it, and it got mailed back. I never defended. And when I said, no, isn't it important to defend? My supervisor just looked at me, and he was such a kind man. And he's like, every time you write a paper, are you going to go to that person's house and explain the paper? Or does your writing have to stand for itself? And I was like, wow, that's a different take. So I don't have a date. It's when did the stuff get mailed back? And it was like sometime in December 2004.
Well, first of all, I mean, that's a truly distance ed approach. And our Australian colleagues, I mean, you know, it's a small continent, but it's a huge country, right? So, I mean, with a large portion of the population, you know, spread out. They've been doing, I think, pretty, you know, innovative and quietly precedent setting stuff in terms of their distance delivery and ed tech. You know, I don't know, probably get less credit for it than they deserve. And Canadians probably get more credit than we deserve. One thing that we haven't talked about, and I don't know if we'll get to it, you know, Canada being considered, I guess, de facto, you know, one of the leaders in ed tech, you know, in terms of like, you know, people like Dave Cormier, in terms of people like George Siemens, Stephen Downs, you know, and the whole, you know, open and connectivist pedagogy, you know, kind of scholars and practitioners, you know, like, anyway, tons of other people whose names I should be remembering right now. But, you know, one factor of it is that Canada is just so friggin' ginormous. And how do you accomplish learning, you know, via distance in that kind of setting? So, again, I didn't know until 10 minutes ago or 15 minutes ago, Doug, that you had your degree in history, because that is that's super interesting to me. My younger kid is actually going through a whole history thing right now where he's asking me very sophisticated questions about World War II strategies. And I'm like, please send this to your grandfather who knows more than me and cares more about it than me. So I appreciate now how that's kind of informing the perspective. I'm an English major and a reformed English teacher. So, I mean, that explains, I think, a lot of my narrative friggin' affections or affectations, right? So, anyways, difference between ed tech and instructional support. We have a naming issue. I'm just going to go back to your notes here. Not that I'm enjoying.
Now one thing I'm going to tie together is we got the vapors at the beginning describing all this stuff internally. You described how cold you were and how stuff was in your throat and in your lungs and everything. Yep. And I found a quote where it's like, EdTech is frequently a congealed form of a flawed idea. That education technology is primary and best solution to social problems.
What?
And that's by Merrilees and Alvey.
Is that in the Google document, man?
Yeah. It's okay. Like congealed is such a great word for what we're dealing with.
And I had, you know, you can ask my son, who you can't quite see here. Like, I've been just, the congealedness has been defining. congealed.
So what, and the back and forth, like the metaphors of ed tech, metaphors for ed tech. The other part of that is I found a thing from like CNN, and what ed tech people are starting to do now is they're changing the titles. It could be the instructional technology coach, the ed tech coach, e-learning specialist, IT training specialist, education program manager, training and development specialist. They're trying to take little bites out of ed tech and say, this is us. This is what I do. So when we keep trying to use the big ed tech word, it's just too big, too congealed, too confusing. It's everywhere. So if we could get a better name and get control of that somehow and what the definition is, then I think that would help us, especially in post-secondary. So we're not the people that know how Moodle works. We might know how Moodle works, but that doesn't mean that that's all we know.
Okay. So first of all, again, I appreciate the whole you know, you got a vision of how this stuff goes, and you are pretty good at connecting the dots, which, you know, I sometimes kind of just, you know, tend to see one of these sticking points and kind of use that as an excuse to go off on a tangent. But I will say, just, you know, based on what you were just speaking to, my first year at UCalgary, summer 2012, and Garrison, you know, himself was Garrison himself, Dr. Randy Garrison, of whom is cited, you know, hundreds of peer-reviewed work, a lot of it, most of it probably to do with community of inquiry. You know, he's teaching the seminar, he's teaching the grad seminar. There's 10 of us in this sweaty friggin' seminar room. One thing he sort of said towards the end of it, you know, is, you know, you're not here to fix the computer. That's not your job. You are here to like make sense of this and, you know, provide guidance on instruction, and you're here to teach with it, right? You are teachers with this stuff, and you have the ability to also provide guidance to others. And it's not like, you know, you're not the person to call when the widget won't click on the thing, you know, any of that. I mean, just let's divide the, you know, thing amongst their proper areas. And let's just say you need this level of credentials and experience and, you know, PLAR, whatever, to do IT, you know, stuff. And similarly, you know, for a teaching thing, again, I don't mean to say like, let's mandate this, let's drive people out of their jobs. So, you know, just again, to speak to what does, I think, tend to work, that provincial instructor diploma program from VCC here in BC, to me, I mean, it looks pretty viable. I was involved with it when, you know, I was at TRU. That was one thing that I was pretty pleased with. And, you know, so there's ways to do this, but it just seems like nobody necessarily recognizes the importance or necessity of that. I shouldn't say nobody. It's just, again, it's like, I don't know, you know, it's like you could give a pretty good definition of an elephant if you had to. You know, it ought to be more or less the same for ed tech. So yeah. I guess as we sort of get, you know, towards the bottom of the second half here, I'm just going to keep going through this because you got some really good points here, but nothing's necessarily kind of jumping out in the big letters. I will replicate those notes faithfully with perhaps some aesthetic and functional changes. I think, like I said earlier, the contribution here has just been to say, whoa, you know, conceptual clarity is needed. The vapors, you know, as it were, can sort of keep you in a superstitious or unrealistic state. I did a philosophy minor, Doug, and I just asked my son, you know, Plato, what's your favorite thing by him? Aristotle, you know, just to be a complete jerk. He was like, Plato, I rolled that up and put it up my nose when I was 3. And I was like, good answer, son. I'm never going to talk to you about this again. But he had, you know, the allegory of the cave, okay? I had this amazing philosophy professor, Frank Cronin, rest his soul, at St. Thomas University in Fredericton. And he did his whole thing about Plato. So when he talked about we are, you know, bound by the necks in the cave, it's dimly lit, and we are just looking at flickers of the wall, you know, of a fire that's being cast behind us. And that's as close as any of us can get to any kind of objective reality. And the poor bastard who actually broke away and got out of the sun immediately just went blind because, you know, he's never been out there before. So, or they have never been out there before. So I don't know necessarily, you know, it's like, that may be kind of a diversion, but every time I'm staring at something on a flat screen or, you know, whatever, it just, you know, it's kind of in the back of my mind. Like, again, I hate to say conceptual clarity is needed, like that's kind of a silver bullet or a, you know, fix all. But I just think it's something that maybe people don't even necessarily stop to consider all that often, although I'd be happy to be proven wrong. Doug, what do you got to say about as far as
I like to get to the root of situations. And yeah, conceptual clarity would go a long way to sorting out these preconceived notions and the confusion that floats around out there.